What is happening, everyone? Coach Ishak with HawkFit Coaching and Legion Athletics, and your host for today's episode of Anabolic Radio. I'm joined today by Cliff Wilson from Team Wilson Bodybuilding. He's been in the space for a minute. He's someone I've learned quite a bit from over the years. He's also the author of a book, The Complete Contest Prep Guide, and he's also working on another book, which I don't know if he's revealed too much about it, but it's sounds like a pretty epic project, and I'm sure a lot of people will take tons of value away from it, just like his first project. How are you doing today, Cliff?
I'm good. I'm glad we could finally link up and make this happen. I know we've been working on it for quite some time here.
Yeah, absolutely. There's tons of complications, and like, we're busy people, but I'm glad we're able to get this episode going. So for the basis of this episode, guys, we're going to be primarily talking about mindset when it comes to approaching your bodybuilding or body composition related goals, persevering when faced with adversity, switching perspectives, and a bunch of other cool stuff. To go ahead and get this discussion started, why don't you go ahead and give the audience a brief background of yourself, Cliff?
Yeah. Like you said, I've been coaching for quite a while now. Time sure flies. I kind of started part-time coaching really in like 2010. I wasn't planning on making this a career as coaching bodybuilders. I just was helping some guys at my gym, and it grew pretty quickly and I liked it. And then in 2012, I took the leap and started doing this full-time. And I never even really worked with general population. I just went right into only bodybuilders because I knew what I loved and what I was good at. So things grew really, really quickly. And here I am about 10 years later from starting to do it. And, you know, I've worked with well over 100 people that have turned pro. I had 13 different natural world championships with my clients. And I've coached over 400 athletes now. So, you know, it's been a long road, but I'm one of those lucky people that gets to do what he loves all day, which is coach bodybuilders.
Nice, man. I'm sure you've learned quite a bit when it comes to just experience and having your hands in like different athletes and different approaches. And I think that's something that's undervalued today, because like a lot of people tend to like gravitate towards like the latest and greatest from what's coming out from like the evidence-based place or whatever research study, where in actuality, like having experience, me personally, like that's made such a fundamental difference when it comes to like my ability to coach others. So do you find like your experience over the years is something that's played like such a crucial role in like the success of an athlete?
Yeah. You know, and it's funny. And you kind of touched on it too, that I like that we're going to talk about some of the mindset aspects, because when I first started coaching, a couple of things that struck me when I actually started working with clients. One, when I was really getting, because I tended to be more of a study kind of guy, like I would read the studies and then try to just directly apply. And then you realize that studies, when you break it down in the data, a lot of times people aren't like robots. They're not machines that you just plug in these protocols and everything goes really smoothly. Everybody brings their own individual, not only their individual genetics, but also their own individual mentality. And that honestly took me longer to learn than anything else. And then, like you said, you start to just pick up a lot of tricks along the way. So it is pretty interesting to me how so many of my views have changed over the years just from the experience that I've gained with working with people.
Absolutely. Nice, man. Nice. And so when it comes to mindset, I know this is something we spoke about a little briefly before we started filming, but when it comes to mindset, what are some things you specifically look for in your clients before gearing up to help them for whatever goal they set out for themselves?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned it in the beginning. I'm slowly working on a second book, because I wrote the first book with Dr. Peter Fitchin, you know, that you mentioned. And we kind of touch on we touch on mindset a little bit in there, but it's a lot more of the bodybuilding nuts and bolts, you know, training, diet, rate of loss, posing, and peak week, all of that. So this other book is right in line with what we're talking about. It's more about the mindset of not just athletes, but anybody who wants to become mentally tough. And so I'm about halfway done with it. I can't say when I'll finish. It's just kind of as I'm working, chipping away at it. And so a lot of these things, when I start off with working, like if, when I receive a client application, I look for things that I would say are strengths and things that are red flags. Personally, one of the biggest red flags to me is someone who's impatient. This sport is it's the long game. Nobody has fast success in this sport. And to be honest with you, in a lot of things in life, nothing really comes fast or easy. And so when I see somebody whose patience doesn't match their goals, honestly, I will explain to them why that's probably not appropriate. And then I'm going to watch their reaction. So, I mean, the reason that may not sound extremely important, but and this is actually something I go into heavily in the book, but a lot of research shows that someone's confidence levels is heavily influenced by their ability, how accurate they are in assessing their abilities, and then how accurate they are in assessing the results of those abilities. And like that's pretty much the entirety of your confidence. And so if someone can have all the ability in the world, but if they think that, well, put it this way, let's say that maybe somebody could become Mr. Olympia one day. They have all the ability in the world. Let's say genetically they can become Mr. Olympia. But if they think they're going to get it in 3 years, okay, and they don't get it in 3 years, they're probably going to be crushed and lack this. Maybe what they actually required was 7 years. And so they were really off in gauging how long this process was going to take. They were really off in gauging the results of their abilities. So they were correct in assuming I can be Mr. Olympia one day, but they were incorrect in assuming how long it was going to take. And my experience, the research shows, and my experience definitely shows that the people that are really off on the timing, the results of those abilities, that they're not going to make it. And so as a coach, if I see somebody who is off, but they're close, I can start working to help them make that mental adjustment to, hey, I think you just need to change your time frame here, and I can help them get to it. But if they're way off or they don't respond to my my direction of kind of, hey, you're going to need more time, then I know they're probably not going to make it, because they're going to be crushed when they become disillusioned and find out they can't do it in this time frame that they have in their head.
Mm. Great points, man. Great points. And I'm sure you know about Sean Clarita, who used to be like natural bodybuilder, and then he switched over to pursue a little bit bigger goals, being that Mr. Olympia. He's competed 9 times or 7 times or something when it comes to the Mr. Olympia, and he just keeps trying and keeps trying and keeps trying. And I think that's awesome. That speaks a lot about his mindset too. And specifically for me, well, for most people, we start out and we're driven by these external goals, right? Like, I want to look better. I want to have these abs at the beach so the girls will look at me, or whatever the case may be. When in actuality, that can be focusing on trying to achieve the external can be preventing them in realizing what they're capable of internally and what they could accomplish as an individual. Now, when it comes to mindset and mentality and intensity is everything, which is, one of your slogans, what's something that will help an athlete achieve their fullest potential versus something that's a little bit lackluster?
So there's a couple of different, like you said, like the internal versus external motivations, and motivation is such a tricky thing, because you do have like internal versus external motivators, and then other ones are also going to play into fact, like sort of like a cost benefit. because a lot of motivation is some sort of like a cost benefit analysis. You know, we were talking before the call, I like economics, and motivation is in large part like a cost benefit analysis, or at least part of it is. Sometimes we are not willing to put in what is necessary to get it because it's just not worth the payoff in the end. Here's an analogy that I like to use that may sound really, really dumb here. But if I say, hey, Ishak, I'll give you $10 for 10 minutes of work. And you're like, what do I have to do? And I say, well, you know, can you jog on this treadmill for 10 minutes? And you're like, oh, yeah, that's easy. You know, that's easy money right there. I can do a light jog. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you've been doing much cardio lately, but, so for you, that's easy. If I say, hey, I come to you in a different scenario and I say, hey, I'll give you $10 for 10 minutes of work. And you say, well, what do I have to do? And I say, I just need you to endure 10 minutes of torture. You're like, hell no. Do you know what I mean? So the work was the same. The cost the payoff was the same. The benefit, $10, that remained the same. The cost varied greatly. A 10-minute jog versus torture. So the cost wasn't the same in the end. Now, if I change that and I say, I will give you $10 billion for 10 minutes of torture, you might be like, I think I can make this. You know what I mean? I might be able to make this. I'm not saying you take it, but you'd at least, you'd entertain it. Because the cost benefit ratio has changed. You know what I mean? And so I guess what I'm going to say with that is, I think people need to think of it that way. Try to accurately assess what the cost of this process will be. And if you were to get it, now this isn't, but you know, if you were to accomplish what you want to accomplish, is the payoff at the end worth it? And so kind of also tying that into the external and internal motivators that you said. So like if everything is achievement based, I want to win this show, you know what I mean? I want to win this bodybuilding show. That's more achievement based. So then you get other factors into it. Well, what happens if I start doubting my ability to win this show? Suddenly those costs may not seem worth it. Do you know what I mean? But people that have those internal benefits, I enjoy along the way to the show, things like, I like pushing myself and testing myself. That's sort of a joy benefit to me. I like watching my body change. That's a benefit to me. I enjoy this process. I enjoy training. That's a benefit to me. So if you can gather those internal benefits along the way towards your achievement, you're going to be much more likely to stay motivated and get to where you want to go.
Absolutely, man. And hey, for some people, they might see running as torture, you know?
And I'm one of those people too. So I'm right there with you. Well, and that's a great point though, you bring up, because people view the process differently. A perfect example. I compete myself. I love prep. I love contest prep. I mean, it has parts that are grueling. Like, of course I want to eat, but I do like watching my body change. I like the challenge of pushing myself. Whereas the next guy, everything that he does may be a means to an end, and it's just torture for him, you know? So sometimes the next guy might look at me and think, how does this guy keep pushing through? When in actuality, it's usually not even a pushing through. It's like, I don't wake up every morning in contest prep and think, oh God, I have to do this today. I kind of think, oh, I get to do this today. And then, you know, if we flip that, maybe he likes training for a marathon. Maybe he enjoys the process of training for a marathon. Whereas if I were to take the process of training for a marathon, it would be grueling torture. And I know I wouldn't make it, you know, it's because we each view those processes very differently individually.
Yeah. For sure, man. Especially like contest prep. It's like that excitement. It's like waking up in the morning. It's like you're smelling a fresh cup of coffee already brewed. Like you're ready to get after it. And to further your point, yeah. So like me personally, when I first got into this, I was very externally driven, right? But over the years, and especially after my last contest prep, it's more so switched to more internal, right? Like, why am I doing this? So I'm doing this to not only improve my health, not only improve my longevity, but I really enjoy bodybuilding. I love challenging myself. I like pushing it that extra mile. And, you know, I think it has to do with a little reframing, right? But some people, especially in today's society, it's like very instant gratification driven, right? People want those results quick. There are all these fit teas and detoxes and all that bullshit that like helps deter them from actually trying to achieve something sustainable they're able to maintain long term. But yeah, man, absolutely. Now, when it comes to mindset, mentality, and all this that we're talking about, what are some of the main experiences that you've had over the years that have really allowed you to thrive mentally when it comes to like not only coaching, but prepping yourself as a competitor?
You know, I think some of them really happened even before I got into bodybuilding, at least for me personally as a competitor. I think there are some genetic factors involved in this. I mean, the research does show there are some genetic factors involved, but there are also like life experience and then things that I guess that I did early on in life that were beneficial to me. And I didn't even realize it at the time. I'm going to give you maybe even a few examples. If you don't mind. So like one time when I was playing, I played basketball in grade school and high school and eventually in college. It may sound dumb, but I was in a fifth grade basketball tournament. And it was a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. And for those that don't know what like a double elimination is, it means you have to lose two times before you're out. We lost the very first game, which meant that we had to take a harder road to get to the finals. And it meant that we actually had to win 16 games in a row over the course of a 2-day span, by the way, to win the championship, which, you know, on its face seems terribly impossible. And I had good coaches at the time and they were, you know, I'm a fifth grade kid, you know what I mean? They're like, hey, just one game at a time, one play at a time, do the best you can. They were really just like, don't look at this. They wouldn't even let us look at the brackets. They were like, hey, just one game at a time. That's what we're going to focus on. And we really did. We took it game by game and we came back and won the whole thing, including beating the team that beat us in the first game twice. And it may seem small, like, oh, it's a fifth grade basketball tournament. It's meaningless. But you'd be surprised how throughout the rest of my basketball career, when I got down, whenever I was on teams that were, you know, we got down in games or whatever it may be, there was always this kind of like voice in my head that was like, this is still doable. I've done something even harder before. Do you know what I mean? So this is, of course, possible. And so you'd be surprised how having certain wins or at least cataloging certain wins in your head and, hey, I've done this before, so this I can also do. And sort of cataloging wins and losses can pay a lot of dividends towards your future. And if you didn't get it done, learning from that experience. So I think the people that tend to have this ability to continue to thrive, they don't really take the wins and losses as emotional baggage. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's more of an analytical tool. Oh, I've done this before. So I can do this. I've done this before, so I can do that clearly, or I've done this before, I can do it again. And if you lost, hey, I lost or I failed because I did this, I won't make that mistake again. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And so, find that for myself as a coach, when I'm working with, athletes, part of my job is to do that for them. Hey, you did this before. You can easily do this. Hey, you failed doing this before. This is why you failed. Don't make that mistake again. And so I think framing and perspective as a coach, you know, is a big part of what I provide.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I loved how you said life experiences are things that shaped that. You know, something big I realized from my last contest prep, again, just going back to it, is that I've learned so much through just bodybuilding. Like, it's taught me a lot of great qualities like work ethic, perseverance, persistence, like dedication. The list goes on and on. And over the years, as I've developed those specific qualities, I've been able to help push them in other areas of my life. And, you know, specifically like life experiences too, like going through hard shit, like me personally, like some of the things I've been through, to the audience that are listening, like I lived in my car for a year while I built my business, and like a bunch of different experiences that like made the actual contest prep, like it wasn't even fucking hard. And, you know, some people, they're like dragging ass, they're starving, you know, they're negative day to day. I feel like those life experiences that I had actually were defining life experiences. They made a lot of like difficult things easier to push through or maintain like a more rational state of mind. Now, when it comes to trying to set these specific goals for ourselves, what are some things you could add in addition to what we've been saying for the audience to better prepare themselves for a contest prep?
Well, kind of like you said, the reframing and prepare for it to be harder than what it is. You know, and I didn't know you had lived in your car for a year while you were building your business, but I mean, it's kind of the same deal. You know, once you've experienced true hardship, a lot of things don't seem as difficult in comparison. And kind of like, I would guess from your perspective, contest prep doesn't seem as challenging after you've faced like real life challenges.
and yeah, it was pretty easy.
Yeah. And you know, I guess, you know, not to go too deep, but, you know, I grew up with an alcoholic parent, and, you know, it's like all the stuff that comes along with that. So it's like, yeah, it's, oh, what's a little less food? Do you know what I mean? So, But I always try to, so I actually think one of the things that's problematic with people's goals is that, they misinterpret how hard they're going to be to obtain. So if a lot of times I find myself playing the role of expectation management, so during contest prep, if somebody's getting ready for a contest prep, I try to explain to them, this is going to be brutally hard. It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. Because then once they're in it, and it's not as hard as they anticipate, or let me put it this way, if they're in it and if it is extremely hard to them, then I've prepared them for it. If they get in it and it's not as hard as I made it seem out to be, then they're pleasantly surprised. There's no negative outcome for expecting the worst, honestly. Whereas if, you know, I went the other route and said, you're going to handle this, no problem, it's not going to be as bad as you think. If it's worse than that, then they're going to become disillusioned and it's a lot more difficult. I mean, a great example, expectation just counts for so much. If I were to come to you and said, hey, you know, I'm from the lottery and you are going to win a sum of money, you won the lottery and you're going to be getting a giant sum of money. Okay. So if I tell you that you are going to be receiving $1 billion. And I always put this, you know, I use money a lot because it's something that people understand, but I say, you're going to be receiving $1 billion. You'd be like, well, hell yeah. You know, I'm excited. I'm going to receive $1 billion. And I say, oh, I'm so sorry. We made a mistake. You receive $1 million. And $1 million is still amazing. You know what I mean? Like, but you'd be so disappointed. You were expecting $1 billion. $1 billion is kind of that range of, I really don't ever have to think about money ever again. $1 million is not really that case. You know what I mean? You can still blow $1 million pretty easily. And it's all expectation. If I had to come to you in the first place and said, hey, you're going to get $1 million, you'd be over the moon. But then, you know, but if I did that switch, hey, you're expecting $1 billion and you get $1 million, then you're going to have to like work that through in your head. You know, your life, your what you were anticipating is drastically different now. And so, you know, expectation management is just so, so important.
I love that expectation management. So this next rabbit hole is increasingly important because the current situation that's happening, the pandemic, and although gyms are starting to open back up, I think that's dependent on the country and where you're at in the world. But what are some tips you could provide the audience when it comes to adjusting or manipulating their nutrition and training due to unforeseen circumstances? This could even be like not even related to this situation because shit happens in contest prep that's unexpected. What are you going to do to the situation? Well, the only thing that's left to do is like to really adapt to it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that just trying not to have this light switch mentality, as I always call it, because like people have this tendency, not just in bodybuilding, but bodybuilders are particularly bad at this, where they're like, I'm in bodybuilding mode. I'm eating nothing but chicken and rice and broccoli every single day, and I'm training all the way. And then once things don't go perfectly, their bodybuilding mode gets switched off, and oh, things didn't go as well. It's time to just eat this entire pizza, you know. And I can't train perfectly, so I'm just not going to do it at all. Where actually, I think it should be a little bit more like a dimmer switch, where you can dial it up or dial it back a little bit. You know, there's a big range between a plain chicken breast with rice and an entire pizza. You know, you can have chicken breast and, or, you know, you can have a steak or a fattier steak than you normally have. And, you know, you can maybe have some macaroni and cheese or something like that. That's still like a little bit more calorie conscious, or, you know, mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing is trying not to get to the point where you just say to hell with it. You know, trying to realize that you don't need to be perfect in these times, but you definitely can have some control. And I think that's a big problem right now, is people kind of feel a lack of control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then the other thing, this isn't really mindset related, but also realize that this period of not being able to train that much, muscle memory is a powerful thing. So once you get back in the gym, it's going to come back extremely, extremely fast. I had a client who, one time lost, he had an illness and he had to be hospitalized for a period of time, and he lost, 30 pounds of pure muscle, probably even more. Because when you look at it, he lost 30 pounds of weight, but he probably lost more than 30 pounds of muscle when you really look at the photos. And once he was released from the hospital, it wasn't like a normal injury. It was a digestive disorder that he had. So once he was able to get back into the gym, he was able to go 100%. He didn't have to work around an injury. He regained all of it in 2.5 months. He gained 30 pounds of muscle in 2.5 months. So, you know, my guess is that some of the people, you know, if you've lost 3, 4, 5 pounds of muscle, my guess is that would probably come back in 2 weeks' time.
Mm. Great point, man. Yeah, I've always, you know, especially like with some of the content I've been putting out, like where there's a will, there's a way. Like if you really want to get it done, maintain like your habits, you're still able to do so. Like sure, the gym could be taken away from you, but you not keeping up with the habits that you've built up is a decision, right? So like I've made fucking dumbbells from a wood dowel and concrete, or like I would go to this park and like overhead press a giant ass log, and where like if you really understand like these principles and concepts when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to like exercise science, you're still able to make the appropriate accommodation to still get shit done. And with the gyms opening up, the limiting factor for most people is going to be just recovery and managing supply and demand appropriately. But getting out of the nutrition training talk for a sec, when it comes to that term or that slogan, intensity is everything, how did you coin that and what does that really mean to you?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times people, I think they misinterpret the intensity is everything thing because they think like it means with training. Oh, just go to failure in every set. But actually, my clients know it's a little bit more of a lifestyle type mentality that I try to preach to my clients where I don't want them to ever just coast. And that doesn't mean everything needs to be 100% all of the time, but everything should be deliberate. Adjusting your intensity is important. And you know, I set a pretty high standard for my clients where how I want things to be done. And so, you know, I going back to that light switch, I always tell my clients, we're not turning the dimmer switch up to 100% and just leaving it there. You know, we're not going 100% intensity in terms of all encompassing, you know, with our food, with our training or everything like that, but we are managing that intensity. One of the things that I've noticed about the greatest athletes, not just bodybuilders, they always have this ability to know when to turn it on and when to turn it down. And so the Last Dance, the Bulls documentary that's going on right now, you'll notice like Michael Jordan would always, you know, ramp it up for games, but he had that ability to sort of like relax and enjoy himself. Because if he were up all the time, then he would burn out. And so for my clients, I always refer to their intensity settings. How intense are they treating everyday life? I say it's everything because you have to manage it. You can't coast. You can't just be at default 100% all the time. And you can't just not think about how intense or how much you're going to be bringing to the table in terms of mental focus and physical aggression to everything that you're doing. So I really mean it's everything because it needs to constantly be managed and deliberately managed. How many times have you over the years met these guys that I would say are default 100% intensity guys?
Quite a bit.
Yeah, they go into the gym and they're like, I'm going to get huge. You know, nobody's going to beat me. And then they train balls to the wall, 100%. We're talking like 25 sets per muscle group to failure. You know what I mean?
Damn.
And then where are they in 6 months? They're usually not in the gym, you know, because they burn themselves out. So they're horrible at managing their intensity. And then you have those other guys that at the opposite end of the spectrum, it's almost like they have no motor behind them. They never turn the intensity dial up. And at least what I preach to my clients, everybody has a little bit different intensity setting that is manageable and sustainable to them. So I think you, at least for my clients, I urge them, you know, we have times where we turn it up. Like when we're ramping into a show, we become a lot more hyper-focused on things. So we turn that dial up, and then after the show, we start turning it back down a little bit. But I want them to constantly be flirting with what is maybe too much. Mm. And then you can dial it up for, you know, overreach for a period of time and then pull it back down. And so I think there's a lot to be said for learning your own intensity dial for what is too much and when you need to dial it back. And I think there needs to be deliberate action and thought behind that.
Absolutely. Great points, man. Great points. And we've been talking about contest prep and really thriving when it comes to just like your general mindset. And I know for me personally, I've had really good coaches in the past, like 2015, Jeff Alberts, and he's really allowed me to embody the long game mindset and the big picture mentality. Now, we see this often when it comes to contest prep, like it comes to competition season, people are like, go, 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 go. They're hyper-focused. They're super strict on themselves, which, you know, we could talk days for about different approaches you could utilize when it comes to competition prep. But it's increasingly important, my thoughts on it personally, to just like really use your off season as a period of like balance and exercising flexibility. And although you're being a little bit more lax, but just understanding that the longer you do this for, the more consistently you do it for, the more you'll progress long term. Now, for you personally, or when you work with your clients, what are some tips you can give the audience in regards to maximizing their off season or just really exercising that flexibility and balance muscle?
Yeah. So, I think there's a flexibility is such an individual thing, I guess I would say. So I think I try to always figure out what kind of person I'm dealing with. I think one of the hardest things for younger bodybuilders in particular to realize is that, how do I put this? There's no benefit to thinking about bodybuilding 24/7. Because, you know, you can do your, bring your mentality to your training. If you're going to go all out in the gym, yeah, all right, I need to be dialed in and focused thinking about bodybuilding there. But if I'm going to do my cardio, I don't need to be always, you know, unless you're doing high intensity, you know, if you're doing HIIT cardio, then yeah, you need to bring your A game mentally focused to push yourself. But if you're doing like some low intensity steady state cardio, why do you need to be amped up? You know what I mean? Like, give yourself a mental break. That's also what I talk about with intensity is everything. You're managing. Like, I think there's a lot of value in, like, deliberately bringing yourself down when you're doing some cardio. Let me do some cardio and let me listen to an audiobook, something that's not bodybuilding related, maybe, to give myself a break. You don't need to be amped up when you're in your kitchen cooking your bodybuilding meal. You know, I can consume a perfect bodybuilding meal without thinking about bodybuilding. You know what I mean? Like, I can cook some vegetables and some, you know, lean meat and some rice or potatoes, and I can be having a perfectly nice conversation with my wife or girlfriend that has nothing to do with bodybuilding. I'm still doing bodybuilding. So one of the things that I would say I always try to get my clients to do is to turn off the 24/7 bodybuilding mentality. You can still do all of the bodybuilding actions without being it solely what you talk about and think about. And I genuinely believe that you will be a better bodybuilder for it, because I find a lot of these guys that are the 24/7 bodybuilding kind of guys, one, I think we're dealing with like compulsions more than motivations. Like they're compulsively doing it. And usually I find that their training isn't as intense as I would like it to be, because they're part of my language, but they're fucking exhausted by the time they get to the workout. You know what I mean? Like, they spent 24 hours just like thinking about it.
They're hyped for it.
Yeah. Like, you're too amped up. You're worn out by the time you get to the workout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that, and one thing I'll even do when I get guys or, you know, guys or women that have that attitude, sometimes when they're in contest prep, I'll give them like a prescription. I'll say, you need to go, if you're in contest prep, and we all get a little bit that way during contest prep. You know, I'll admit it myself, like during contest prep, sometimes it becomes a little consuming and I try to catch myself, but I'll tell them, hey, you know, I think you're becoming a little hyper focused right now. For your cardio, at least twice this week, if they're doing like low intensity steady state, I'll say I want you to go for a walk with your spouse for your cardio, and I want you to talk about anything but bodybuilding to them. Because, you know, that's going to, one, enhance their relationship, because they're talking about stuff that's not bodybuilding, and it takes them out of that bodybuilding mode. So I try to do that, and I just think that there's value in, now if we're talking off-season flexibility, like you said, maybe enjoy a meal out where you just estimate the macros. It's not going to be the ruiner of your progress. I think, yeah, if you do it too often, you're going to start to see some backsliding, but, you know, everybody needs to find where they can genetically fit that in as well. But I just think if we're talking mindset, there's such a value in not being a 24/7 bodybuilding on my mind kind of guy. And, you know, even the greatest athletes of all time, some of the best that have ever done it, they had so many other interests, besides the sport that they're in. People that go to my Instagram probably think I live and breathe bodybuilding 24/7, but, you know, I have a lot of other interests that are not bodybuilding as well. And if you want some proof to go with it, there is a study that shows that Nobel Prize winners, have a greater degree of a wider variety of interests outside of their chosen specification and specialization. And they tend to do more arts and crafts than the other researchers, their peers in the same field. So usually Nobel Prize winners tend to have a wider variety of interests than other researchers. So I think that right there shows that there's usually benefit to being able to have more of a holistic approach to things and give yourself a break, because then you can go harder when you actually do your chosen specialization.
Mm. Great points, man. Great points. Even like a little bit of a reminder for myself, because I'm that way with my work, like, and all the side projects I'm working on, and given it's one man team, there's a lot to be doing, but you know, I'm not as like focused, bodybuilding focused as I was like 2 years ago. Just because, like, I know it's just another means for me to improve in life, and there are other things that I enjoy improving in. There's like, and I don't watch TV a lot. I use that as an opportunity to practice those other skills, whether that be cooking or like playing the guitar or whatever the case may be, just different activities that improve my quality of living and enjoyment for like each and every day, and specifically for work. Something that I've been trying to work on, because I'm not perfect with it yet, is just like pulling back and having like a day or two where I literally just fucking take a deload from work and all social media. And yeah, man, great points. So specifically for bodybuilding, you know, there's a lot of people who are always focused on improvement, and they're always focused on these bodybuilding related goals, and that can prevent them from realizing how far they've truly come. What are some takeaways you could give the audience when it comes to just like appreciation of the journey and just kind of like being easy on yourself too? Because it's good to be focused, but you know, like we said, it's good to also be like a little bit balanced and stop and smell the roses and appreciate how far you've come.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. There's a lot to be said. It's kind of become a cliche buzzword in the whole Instagram culture, like positivity movement, but I do think mindfulness is a big part of it. Deliberate action. And I'm going to go on a little sidebar here. I mean, not in these like COVID-19 times, but think back to pre-COVID-19. Think of grocery shopping before COVID-19. All right. Grocery shopping was always a very interesting experience, has always been a very interesting experience to me, because I would say I've always been a pretty mindful guy. I'm everything I do is very deliberate. When I walk through the grocery store, I always can't help but notice how many people are on autopilot. Do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. It's like zombie mode. You can't talk to them. It's like, hey, how's your day? Oh, good. Beep, beep.
Yeah.
Scan. Next person.
They're half there, man. I really try to, I mean, we all have our days, right? But I really try to avoid that autopilot mode. And I try to always be present. I always try to be observant, notice little things, notice what I'm doing. And I think that a lot of that along this bodybuilding process can be helpful. Well, one, it's going to be entirely more effective if you're present, especially when you're training. I think that then when you're present, then you can also look back more appreciatively on your past because you were present in those moments. Mm-hmm. You know, because if I'm present here and I know how I look today, I accurately take in how I look today, how I feel today. If I compare it to the bodybuilder I was 5 years ago, I should be acutely aware of just how far I've come. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can handle I can train so much harder. I can take on this process much more easily than I used to. I think if you're doing bodybuilding right, the process just gets easier with time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you take it easy on yourself. It's just that you develop this resolve, your effort. You can put forth greater effort with less mental effort, if that makes sense. And so I think that part of it is just being mindful of everything that you're doing. And then you can think back of this previous time when you were being mindful and remember exactly how you felt and how you looked, and make a comparison to say, man, I've come a long way.
Conscious, deliberate action. And it's easier said than done. It's something that you like is definitely probably has to be worked on for most people, just being present, conscious, and aware at that given time. So switching gears a little bit, when it comes to contest preparation, what are some of big things that you set your clients up with at the go, and like specifically like nutrition too? So like you have a lot of people, they see the shreds and they want to attain them, right? And you have so many people focusing on a calorie deficit, when in actuality, it's like the nutritional system and the periodization of your nutrition and managing that appropriately with your training is what's going to actually help you achieve those results, and focusing on all the different variables that contribute to nutrition, like MPS, nutrient timing, like so on and so forth, sufficient micronutrients. So just anything to add on there that you help your clients up with to succeed when they do in fact start contest prep.
Yeah. So you're talking more mentally, like set them up with, correct?
Yeah, it could be nutrition or training related too, but mentally for sure.
Okay. So, you know, when it comes to the diet and the training, I guess I wouldn't say there's always, because I always give my clients, of course, their foundational setup where I lay out my expectations for them in this process, you know, what I want them to do, what I want them to communicate to me. So I think one, setting the expectation of standards in their diet and training is important. I think usually it's pretty evident where I laid out to them that I shouldn't be more invested in this process than they are. Mm. They at least match me. In my experience, at least I think there are different types of coaches. Some coaches are the types where, you know, they're going to give you the rah, rah pep talk all the time. And I'll do that. You know what I mean? I'll do it. But if I, you know, if you're not invested into this process, and this is why I knew I was better with bodybuilders than I was with general population. Because if you're not invested in this process, if you're not as invested in getting every ounce out of your potential, if you're not as invested as I am, then, I don't think this will work. You know, it doesn't mean you're not going to stumble along the way, but I just have to know that you really want it. Mm. And as far as what I usually want to set them off up with is a process focused mentality instead of a result focused mentality. Results will come. And of course, results is what we're all here for, right? You know, we all want to make progress. But I think the constant eyeing of the results and the talking about the results, not only is it not helpful, I think it's detrimental. You know, if I'm running a marathon, I'll go to marathon running because this is an easy analogy. But if I'm running a marathon, I'm going to be best served if I'm looking at the steps I'm taking in front of me and maybe a little bit in front of me. You know, maybe this block, I'm looking at this step, and how fast should I push maybe for this block? You know, I'm looking at the steps immediately in front of me. If I'm constantly talking to this guy about what it's going to be like at the finish line, you know, I think my time will be this. If I'm pulling out binoculars and looking at the finish line, you know what I mean? Like, that's very distracting from my process that will actually make me better. And I think guys that are constantly viewing their finish line, and when I say viewing their finish line, they're like obsessively looking for guys that they think they'll look like when they hit, you know, get to that point one day. You know, they're sending me pictures of Kai Greene going, do you think I'll look like this one day? You know, they're looking up those pictures. They're telling everybody about how they're going to look in, you know, the next 2 years or whatever. Like, you need to stop with all that and just focus, you know, focus on what's actually going to get you to these spots, and maximize your potential, which is your next training session, your next meal, your next good night's sleep. You know, stop always, you know, looking off into the future, because I genuinely believe it's detrimental, and it definitely doesn't help.
Mm. Great points, man. Great points. Absolutely. You have a lot of people who are just laser focused on that end goal when a majority of the work that's done is in the process that has to take place, right? Every day. I mean, you're not going to fast forward like within that, what is it called? That Adam Sandler movie, Click. Yeah, you're not going to fast forward 6 months to where you're shredded, and you have to endure. And that builds the mental fortitude required to really like actually succeed in other areas of your life. Even if you don't even like, this is something big. Like so many people place such a heavy weight on show day and winning a trophy or winning a show, and then they don't win on show day, or they don't win that trophy, they don't win that show, they regress back to their old ways, or like they're not able to see how far they've come and what they've accomplished throughout the entire process. So great points, man. Now, when it comes to mindset, what are some things that have specifically helped you thrive with your coaching and your growth over the years?
You know, I think the biggest thing is, so I do have like certain things that I look for. Like we were talking before we started recording here a little bit, but I think there are certain characteristics that make someone mentally tough. And a lot of these characteristics, a lot of people almost view them as inherent. You know, they think this person's just a motivated person. That's just the way they are. This person's a confident person. That's just the way they are. This person's a resilient person. That's just the way they are. And genetics do play a factor in these things. And but it doesn't mean that everybody can't continue to work on their baseline levels. Here's the thing is, I told you, know, as I said earlier, I played basketball. I couldn't jump for shit when I played basketball, you know, typical like 6 foot white guy problems, you know what I mean, in basketball. But that doesn't mean that not working on it was, you know, it didn't mean I didn't work on it. I went through a lot of jumping programs that I would do, and I would, you know, work on my ability to jump, and it helped. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean we just take everything where we're at and just not work on it. And so, one, as a coach, educating myself, the same way that I educate myself about the training and nutrition research, which I have thoroughly, and then I've combined it. You know, I wrote the book with Dr. Peter Fitchin, and that entire book is the combination where we take, you know, we're not saying that the bodybuilding book was,
it's a monster. Cheeky plug. If you haven't read it already, go pick it up.
Thank you. You know, so the book wasn't meant to be the seminal work of training and nutrition information in terms of research. It was, here is what we know about the research that we view as useful within this context, along with here's what we have experienced from all of our years of coaching. And here's how we blend those two together to create what works for us and a compelling argument for why it works. Is that, you know, and I do precisely the same thing when it comes to my mental coaching of people. I've spent a great deal of time researching the psychological aspects that make people what I believe make them mentally tough. And I've viewed a lot of people over the years go through these processes, and I've said things to them to try to change their perspective or their ideas. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. And, you know, then I kind of combine it to this, you know, and then I have this thing that I think has worked for me really well. So if you want to be a really great coach, I would say study psychology research just like you study training and nutrition research.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mental health and like the psychology of bodybuilding contest prep, like even just approaching a body composition related goal, general fat loss or muscle gain, is heavily undervalued for sure. And you honestly, you could have the best protocol in the world, you could have the best programming in the world, but it doesn't mean shit if you're not able to follow through with it, if you're able to adhere to it. You could have the best coach in the world, but it doesn't mean shit if you're not as invested in the process as they are. So great points, man. Really love that.
You nailed it too. You can have the best protocol in the world, and you know, if you can't get them to follow it, I'll even use an example of like when I failed or was failing in the early. So in the early part of my coaching career, I'm gonna say like the first 2 years, I did have success, but I got lucky that I was working with some really competitive people, and I noticed that my competitive people were just crushing it, you know what I mean? But then I started like having this problem. So I tend to be a really let me put it this way. For myself, I tend to be a when I'm doing a good, you know, I'm naturally a process focused person. So when I'm doing my thing, I know when I'm doing well and when I'm not. If I'm following a plan, I know I'm doing well. And so you know, I actually was discounting in the early part of my coaching career the mental process of people. And like a good failure that's kind of funny is for the first couple years, I would have my clients asking me, am I doing a good job? And I remember my wife at the time, I asked her, I go, why do people keep asking me if they're doing a good job, like they're following the plan? And she's like, are you telling them they're doing a good job? And I'm like, well, they're following the plan. Of course, you know, of course they're doing a good job. She's like, but are you telling them that? And I'm like, no, I wasn't. You know what I mean? Like I was thinking from my own perspective, you know? And so then I was like, oh, okay. I need to start telling people a good job. You know, when they're doing well, I need to tell them they're doing well. And then on the flip side, when people weren't following the plan, I wasn't even telling them they weren't doing a good job. I was just like, they know they're not doing a good job. You know, I needed to think with that perspective and like give positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement. And, you know, and so it made me a better coach of like sort of thinking outside of my own self. And so, you know, that was honestly one of the bigger turning points. I have been told many times in my life, I don't think like other people, sometimes in a positive manner, sometimes in a not so positive manner. And so that was what kind of led me down the road of being like, if I'm going to be able to coach other people, I need to get a better understanding of how other people think. And, I really took that as a personal responsibility for my coaching. Cause I, in the early part of my coaching career, it was definitely a big weakness of mine.
Great points, man. Great points. Yeah. Just to add on what you said, like when it comes to like coaching practices, I'm not really like a marketer or like trying to make like bodybuilding, nutrition training sound sexy. I do a really shit job at that. Like one thing that just helps me thrive with coaching is just like explaining shit to my clients, like simply like, why am I implementing this adjustment? What is the purpose of it? And like in me explaining that, that not only like improves their adherence, but that improves their understanding, that ingrains like that habit that we're working so hard to build, like stay, help them stay consistent with it, right? Because like you achieve these body composition related goals, whatever, like you're not trying to maintain those habits short term. Like you really want to add them to your whole life, right? Like this nutrition, bodybuilding, blah, 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 is supposed to be something that like adds to our quality of living, not really like hinders it or takes away from it. So great points, man. Well, I really appreciate it.
A perfect example. I mean, you said it yourself. I like to see that though, because I feel like I can relate to you on that point where your craft isn't marketing. Your craft is your craft, your coaching. Do you know what I mean? And so I do sometimes like, you know, you and I are both running thriving businesses. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but I'll get people coming to me and they're like, you know, how did you market your business? And I'm like, I did not market at all. You know, I simply threw myself into coaching and then I explained what I was doing from time to time and people picked up on it. You know what I mean? I was like, if you want a good lecture on marketing, I'm not the guy to talk to you about that. So yeah, you nailed it. Exactly.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, just cause we're talking about coaching, in case some people are interested, some resources. So like me personally, generally, like what I always recommend, just like having a base understanding of physiology, anatomy, like basic biochemistry, really understanding those can make a significant difference on your quality of coaching. But are there any resources you'd let the audience know about that have made like a significant impact on your ability to coach your clients?
You know, I won't even say it's any one resource. I was literally just having this talk with my girlfriend recently. You know, here's what I would say is learn to be a critical thinker in all aspects. So one, if you're not familiar with the process of critical thinking, familiarize yourself with the process of critical thinking. Go into everything you read and try to disprove it. You know, look for the bits that are useful and the ones that may not apply to what you are doing. And then from that aspect, I tell people to read everything. I have read, in fact, my bookshelf behind me is filled with some awesome books and some totally terrible books. But I feel like, at least for myself, I gained a lot even out of reading totally ineffective materials, because at least for myself, I can always learn a lot about what not to do. You know, like there's a lot of nutrition books that I've read that I would totally disagree with the stance, but at least for myself, going through the process of explaining to myself why I totally disagree with the stance is a very useful exercise, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, so, man. Very valuable exercise.
Yeah. You know, if you can't debate your own stances in your mind, how are you ever going to debate it with someone else? And so I would say become a critical thinker and then read everything. And then also always consider the source. You know, when I read a peer-reviewed published study, I need to give that a lot more weight than somebody's posts on Facebook. You know, but it doesn't. The peer-reviewed published study doesn't inherently make it correct, and somebody's post on Facebook doesn't inherently make it incorrect. But I need to weight that a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I can think of so many times in the course of my bodybuilding career where, you know, somebody I've read a peer-reviewed study, and then I've read somebody's counter argument on Facebook with no resources to back it up. And then what do you know, years later, that Facebook post was with additional research. It looks like that Facebook post was maybe correct and that study was flawed. And so, you know, so I guess I would say become a critical thinker and then read everything and always try to disprove what you're reading. See if you can do it, and always try to disprove what your own thoughts are. I know that wasn't exactly what you had asked for, but
no, it was a great response. to even further your point, like science is the foundation, but science isn't necessarily like coaching, right? There's a lot of things to be considered, and you know, any single protocol, any single stimulus in the body never works in isolation. So that's also something to consider. And like what we're seeing today with some of this literature that's coming out is like they're actually proving some of the old like bodybuilder mentality approaches, which is interesting. Like, I don't know if you've seen this recent one, but like the positioning of your foot during a calf raise or they had a recent one about peaking and like photo silhouette or something, how that improves like a peaking strategy, or I forgot what it was. But yeah, man, great points. I know we're slowly creeping up on time here. Did you have any final notes you'd like to leave the audience with, or anything you have coming up?
I would say, you know, one, don't discount the mental side of things, because I literally consider it to be half of what I do as a coach, or at least a third. I think we're looking at about a third training, a third nutrition, and a third mentality as a coach, because these are people working without robots. I am still, you know, I am going with, you know, we mentioned the book that I'm working on. I am coming along with that. Hopefully be released in the maybe the end of this year or early part of next year. And my goal with it is to be able to share everything that I use as a coach from a mentality aspect with everyone else out there, and then they can put it into practice themselves. And I think that would be, you know, mostly it. And, you know, other than that, just, if people want to find me, they can just find me on my Instagram at CW Team Wilson, or my, website at teamwilsonbb.com.
And go pick up his first book that's already out. Amazon, it's got you. Wow. Overnight delivery.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. Genuinely appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Hope you guys had a blast tuning in.